Ladies and gentlemen, I will call this property tax relief and local sales tax division to order and welcome all and good morning. And we're going to take things a little bit out of order. We're going to start with House File 1459, Representative Murphy. And we don't have a quorum yet, so we will make the motion and delay it over and so forth after we have a quorum, after you're probably gone. So at this point, if you would present your bill and good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm so pleased to be here today. I've been here a long time, and about every 5 years or so, because I have some manufactured home parks, and because in my district, and because the businesses that sell manufactured homes and modular homes tend to be in my district in northeastern Minnesota. About every 5 years or so, I get a bill to bring before you, and this is the year for it. You can imagine my surprise in November, the end of November, early December, when I got a phone call from one of my business people in my district that said, Mary, the St. Louis County Assessor was at our business and said that our models have to be taxed as if they were real homes, and the manufactured houses don't have to be taxed that way, so can you do something? And so I said, I don't know, but I'll find out. And I immediately picked up the phone and called Mr. Bruner from the Manufactured Homes Association and said, what's the deal? And he said, we're going to work on that. And so this is the result. House File 1459 is the result of that, and I ask for your cooperation. With me today is Dean Minardi of Easy Housing in Permantown, and he is Vice President of Minnesota Manufactured Housing. And Mark Bruner of the Minnesota Manufactured Housing Association is also with me, and they can tell you the particular details. But more important is the fiscal note that accompanies this bill, 1459. The Department of Revenue says the costs are not negligible, and it's something that we should do. We should make modular homes tax like manufactured. And so let's let Representative Minardi talk.
I see the negligible part. I don't see the endorsement, however,
well,
from revenue. That am I missing a line in here?
Read those bullet points. That's what I thought of.
Okay, I'm sure it's there somewhere.
I think you're extrapolating.
Let's let Mr. Minardi talk, because he drove all this way.
And I appreciate that. And I'm going to have you testify or set the example for today. So if you can try to keep this, we've got a number of bills and one that has a number of testifiers. So if you could keep your testimony to 2 minutes or less and just cut to the bullet points here, that would be much appreciated. So Mr. Minardi, please proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Again, I'm here on behalf of Easy Housing. It was brought to our attention last fall that we are taxed, our modular homes are taxed at a commercial rate because they're part of our, it's considered in current bill that it's part of our property, which, obviously a display home is just the reverse. It's not a permanent fixture whatsoever. Also in the current laws, manufactured homes are exempt from any sort of a commercial tax. So to try and simplify this and keep it short, what we're here to ask is put the modular homes, display homes, on the same playing field as our manufactured homes. It's simply a display home. It does not enhance the property value as a commercial structure would typically do, because again, it's a display home. It's a temporary setting. Where the tax does come into play is when we also are a spec builder of modular homes. And so when it goes into a neighborhood or development, well, then that is then taxed appropriately. And so just so there's no confusion on that coming into play also. Mr. Chairman, I open up for questions or to simplify it.
Thank you. You set a great example. Thank you. Mr. Bruner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Bruner. I'm with the Minnesota Manufactured Housing Association, and Representative Murphy did a good job of explaining how we got the issue last fall. And briefly, this is something that was never envisioned by the legislature in terms of, you know, manufactured homes, modular homes. There ought to be a difference. At the time that this tax law was written, there were very few modular homes built in Minnesota. The industry has changed. Those sales centers that sell manufactured homes today, probably 90%, also sell modular homes. And so it's just simply a disparity in that there's a specific exemption. And the reason the Department of Revenue came to the conclusion that it did is that there is a specific exemption in statute for manufactured homes not to be taxed as real estate. They're considered inventory. So there's nothing in statute for modular homes. This isn't something that's been, if you will, the practice over the years that modular homes have been treated differently. It's really just something that a question that was raised by a county assessor in terms of, gee, something doesn't seem, you know, quite right here. And the department determined that, yeah, there is specifically an exemption for manufactured, not modular. Therefore, that's the position that they took. And what the bill does is just levels the playing field. And really, when you go to a sales center today, you can't tell the difference between a manufactured home and a modular home. I mean, they have, 6, 7, 12 roof pitch, and then they're built in the same plants. So I think the bill is pretty straightforward in what it does. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you much. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy, I think this seems to make a lot of sense to me. One question I have is it does say that the owner of the home, which I assume be the dealer, has to notify the assessor if for some reason it doesn't fit the qualification. I would assume if it's sold or if it becomes available for sale or something like that would happen, you have to notify the assessor. What's the, what if you don't? What's the incentive to notify the assessor on time? If you don't notify him and they find out later, do you have to go back and pay? There's nothing in here that says if you don't notify him, here's what happens.
Mr. Bruner?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, it would be our understanding that if you don't comply with the requirements in terms of notification, that you would then be subject to the tax that's in place today.
Okay. Thank you very much. And when we have a quorum, we will lay that this over. But thank you so much. And anything else, Representative Murphy?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think it's good. And keep in mind that it's only for the display homes, the modular display homes, which they usually set up with the intent that they will keep up to 5 years. And that was where we got the 5 years from. But after that 5 years, they're going to take the home down, but it's going to be outdated. And nobody's going to be using that home in between time.
Thank you very much. So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
We are now going to move to House File 1113, but Representative, before you make your presentation, I've asked Mr. Volkman from the Department of Revenue to provide a summary on just why we're here today and the recommended changes to the utility valuation rule. I have also asked Mr. Volkman to, just last week, the administrative law judge ruled to phase this in over 3 years, 20% phase in, 50%, and then 100%. So I asked Mr. Volkman, and he's been nice enough to do this, to include in here the numbers for the 20% and then the 100% on that. Members, here's my intent today, because we do have a number of testifiers, is Mr. Volkman, I've given him about 10 minutes, and if we have a few questions, and then I will turn it over to Representative Wolfschlager to present her bill. And then we've got a number of testifiers, about 2 minute a testifier, so that should put us down about 40 minutes, and that'll leave us about 10 minutes then for members' questions and so forth, and we will be laying this bill over no later than 11 o'clock, but I'd like to do it about 10:55, so the drop end date here is 11 o'clock on this bill. So with that, Mr. Folkman, if you would proceed. Sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gordon Folkman, Director of the Property Tax Division with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And to try and make this as brief as I can, Mr. Chairman, what I think I'll try and do is provide summary remarks with the purpose of just trying to familiarize numbers with what's in the handout.
Yeah.
And so I'll walk it through with what that is being the primary purpose. Just for a little bit of background, the first question that comes into mind is why we decided as a department to re-examine the utility valuation rule. And the first item on your handout gives you a couple of reasons as to why that's the case. The rule itself has not really been addressed for many years, going back to the 1970s. And over recent years especially, we've been getting more and more appeals, and more of those are going to tax court, and we felt that it was time to reevaluate the methodology that should be used to coming up some valuation for these properties, because going through litigation is not the most fair and uniform way of doing valuation practices. We contracted, we got the rule and process initiated. We then contracted with a consultant to take a review of our current rule. And in Roman numeral number two, the summary of his findings are that the current rule that we have for evaluating these properties was fairly rigid, did not allow enough a judgment by the appraiser to come up with our statutory requirement of market value, did not necessarily allow the appraiser to use all three approaches to value, which would be the income, cost, and a market approach. It put a cap on depreciation, and it was very prescriptive in the way it allocated the weights between the different cost methods. The department held two public meetings to review the consultant's report and get some impact from the public, host communities, and industry. And after we had that brief, after we had those public meetings, we then established an advisory committee that worked for many months going through the report, and we used them as a sounding board to the different recommendations that we ultimately developed for the rule. The proposed rule that we submitted to the administrative law judge and was approved last, I think February 16th as it was, had a couple of different major changes to it, and they're summarized in Roman numeral number 3. The rule does now allow the apartment and the appraiser to use a market approach, although restricts it and restricts its application. Removes the limitation on depreciation, removes the prescribed weights in the correlation process, allows obsolescence but does throw through the correlation process, and provides, as the chairman indicated, a 3-year phase-in for the rule. And if there are any technical questions about those provisions, I do have Alan Whipple from our office to address those questions. I would not be the one to answer any detailed questions on those issues. Roman numeral number 4 does then summarize the estimated impact of what the new rule would do with valuations on the unitary companies that we do the valuations for in the state of Minnesota. We basically do valuations on 46 companies that are subject to unitary valuation. Electric and gas companies are the ones that the industry's identified there. On average, the estimated impact that Mr. Whipple has done, if we implemented the new rule, would result in about a 20.4% reduction in the apportioned value to Minnesota. If you turn the page, we then took and looked at those valuation adjustments and then ran it through our profit tax simulation models to try and estimate what the fiscal impact of those valuation changes would be. And what Roman numeral number 5 does is provide you with a statewide summary of those impacts. And as you well know, the statewide summary impact is not necessarily very useful because at that level of aggregation it really doesn't tell you some of the information at the community level. And that's also provided in this handout. We'll get to that in just a second. The first part of Roman numeral 5, the A section of the outline, looks at the tax shift implications of the new valuation rule. In summary, what is happening as a result of us modeling it through the property tax model was that the public utility and personal property that's affected by the rule would have a tax reduction statewide or a tax reduction statewide about 17.5% on public utility property and the affected personal property about 12.4%. Or about $15.6 million for public utility and personal property, about $18 million reduction. And there will be corresponding shifts on the commercial industrial property and residential homesteads. And those shifts on a statewide basis, fairly low, 0.5% on homesteads and 0.7% on commercial industrial property. The second part of our analysis, and not only do we want to look at the tax implications, the tax shift implications of the rule, but we also want to get some estimate of what the potential revenue impact there might be on the host communities. In this scenario, levy amount is, the tax rate is held constant, and the levy amount will then drop as a result of the reduced valuation. On a statewide basis, the indication is that on net tax capacity levies, the valuation reductions or corresponding adjustment in the levy that's collected with the lower tax rate was about $25 million on net tax capacity levies. On those levies subject to market value referendum, about $1.8 million, for a total statewide impact of about $27 million. Roman numeral 5, the second page, the next page, then gives you some summary impact on the most affected jurisdictions. And the chart here, then, is what the chairman indicated in terms of a little bit of different presentation for this, from your committee versus the Senate. What we did here was just add that first year phase-in impact to let the numbers know what the 100% reduction in value would be if we fully phased in the rule versus the first year phase-in, which would be applicable for assessment year 07, taxes payable 08. What the analysis shows is that among cities, assuming 100% phase-in of the rule, approximately 115 cities would have an estimated impact of reduction of 1% of their net tax capacity or more. Of those cities, 33 had an estimated reduction of 1% of their levy plus aid. The one summarized here, assuming again 100% reduction, had a 5% reduction in the net tax capacity. The city of Becker was the most affected city amongst all the jurisdictions, and we estimate that if the valuation results that we're estimating were put into play, the tax capacity impact on 100% assumption of the valuation change would be about 15%. In the first year, with only a 20% phase-in, it would be about 3% or 2.98%. That same information is then provided for the most affected towns, assuming 100% phase-in of the rule again. Of the 1,700 plus townships out there, about 177 would have an impact greater than minus 1% of their net tax capacity. Those identified here in the handout are those that have an impact greater than 5%. And again, a 100% scenario would be the 12.6% for the township of Level and a 2% for the first year 20% phase-in. The same information then is provided for counties, Purdue and Sherburne, the most affected counties amongst the 87, and then the most affected school districts are Red Lake, Becker, Red Wing, and Monticello. If you turn the page, we provided a map showing you the distribution or the geographical location of the most affected jurisdictions on a city-town basis. And basically what the map does is just tries to aggregate in certain ranges of impact on net tax capacity and shows you where those most affected city-towns are. The more red the color is, the more affected they are. And again, this map is based on 100% phase-in of the rule. And you can see that the chart is basically showing that 47 city-town jurisdictions fall in the range between a negative 3 and a negative 14.8% reduction in net tax capacity. The vast majority of city-town jurisdictions throughout the state are minimally affected by the rule. The next two pages gives you a little bit more detail on a city, township, school district, and county jurisdictional level. And I will just maybe walk through so you can understand how to read the table. On that first table with a little bit more detail there, it's basically showing you more detail for the shift analysis for the individual cities and the revenue impact that would also occur for the city government or township government, depending on which part of the chart you're looking at. But the way to read the table would be as follows. Again, these next two pages show you what the impact would be under 100% phasing of the rule. The city of Becker, again, is the most affected city. Its change in tax capacity is estimated to be about 14.9%. Its overall tax rate, looking at the overlapping jurisdictions, goes from 96.5% to 105.6%, or about 9.4% shift, or increase in the tax rate. The impact on the average homestead in the city of Becker increases about 9.1%, and the effective tax rate, taking taxes as a percent of market value, is at 1.2% after the rural valuation assumptions are made. At the top of the chart there, you also see that the average statewide effective tax rate is 1.06%. The last two columns show the relative impact on the city of Becker's government budget. It, the levy reduction associated with the valuation change would be resulting in an estimated 14.7% reduction in levy plus aid, or approximately $800,000, if fully phased in. And we show the similar information, Mr. Chairman and members, for the cities, and then the second part of that handout looks at the townships, and the second page of that table then shows the summary information for Goodyear and Sherburne counties, and for the most affected school districts. The next page gives you a summary of the public process that we had to review the rule and get public input. And the last item on there, number 11, indicates for you that as of February 16th, the rule was accepted as it was submitted to, by the administrative law judge. And we're moving forward with implementing that for assessment year 07. It's technically still going through some administrative paperwork, and so it's technically still not in play, but we're anticipating that it will be. And then the last two pages, again, Mr. Chair, based on your request, shows the same information at the city, town, school, and county level, but showing the impact at the 20% phase-in and not the 100% phase-in. And with that, Mr. Chair, that covers the material that I handed out.
Mr. Folkman, thank you so much in doing this and also revamping this to include the 20% as I had asked. And members, we could go into great detail on that, and I'm asking that we don't. I think the bottom line is that the department has determined that utilities were overvalued. The adjustment has been made, and it's going to be phased in 20, 50, 100%. While statewide it's really not much of an impact, it does, as you can see here, specifically hit certain cities and counties quite hard. And so that's going to be the debate, and that's what we're going to look at today is, you know, how are we going to deal with this, with these cities and counties and areas that are specifically hit with that. And we have plenty of testifiers today. We'll, you know, as we put this bill together, there will be more discussion and so forth. So with that, thank you so very much. And at this time, we will, Representative Volkslager, if you will go to the table there. Do we hear someone to move House File 1113 for possible inclusion? Representative Paymar will move House File 1113 for possible inclusion into the division report. Again, we have a number of testifiers. We're going to be holding very steady to the two-minute rule or less. And if I do stop you at 2 minutes, don't take that as a insult. We have session today at 11:30, so we need to be out of here by about 11:28 if we can be. So with that, Representative Volkslager, please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair, members. I would like to move House File 1113 with the author's amendment, which is H1113A1, to put it in the form intended. Okay. So I do need that moved.
So is this for the amendment?
Yeah,
an amendment. Okay, we have author's amendment on A1, 1113A1. Care to move that? Okay, Representative Paymar moves. Any discussion on that amendment? Representative Wolfslager, what is this to the amendment?
There was just, it was an inadvertent inclusion of railroads, and that wasn't intended. It was a mistake, so it was taken out.
Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to call for a vote on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed.
Okay. With me here to testify is Ms. Carol Duff, Red Wing City Council President, Mr. Ken Paulson, Mayor of Becker, and Marshall Hallett, Administrator for Red Wing. Also present in the room, I have 20 people. So you can imagine when we talk about the impact to our cities, when you have 20 people, you know, travel great distances to come here. And these individuals are from, let me get my note here. No, I may have left it over there. Redding School District, Sherburne School District, representatives from Sherburne County, Goodhue County,
Oak Park Heights, Red Wing, and Becker.
Okay.
So, very good. Just wanted to welcome you.
Hmm.
How'd I do on my note here? Monticello. I missed Monticello. Sorry. Okay. This legislation is in response to new rules the Department of Revenue will soon adopt. Once adopted, the rules will devalue electric utility property throughout this state by approximately 20%. The impacts of these rules will be felt primarily by those cities and communities where a large portion of their tax base is taxable utility property. The city of Red Wing is in my district. According to the Department of Revenue, the new assessment rules will create a $1.36 million shortfall for Red Wing. Red Wing School District and Vidhue County will experience shortfalls too. Statewide, there is a tax shift of $34 million onto residential homestead and commercial industrial property. House File 1113 addresses this hardship for the people. With respect to utility property, it affects personal property only. In other words, it doesn't affect real estate. And it does two things. First, it takes the attached machinery category in current law and it divides it into two: electrical generating utility and transmission and pipeline distribution systems. Second, it treats each of the categories differently. Specifically, House File 1113 increases the classification rate on electrical generating utility property from 2% to 3%, and it increases the rate of all transmission and pipeline systems from 2% to 2.25%. The purpose of these class rate increases is to offset tax shifts to residential and business owners. Utilities will not pay any more in taxes once these rates become effective, because the increases simply compensate for changes resulting from the Department of Revenue's new assessment rules. With that, Ms. Duff will now provide her remarks.
Thank you, Ms. Duff. Good morning.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'd like to give you some background.
And if you would please state your name for the...
I'm Phil Duff. I'm City Council President of Red Wing. In 1973, Red Wing had a struggling economy. After study and evaluation, people of Red Wing decided that the added tax base from a nuclear plant with their safety plans was worth the choice. It would give Red Wing economy the boost that it needed. I doubt that our citizens would have supported the building of a nuclear plant, dry cast storage being now housed there, had we not had some incentive to do that. Few communities would have chosen to take on a nuclear plant. One other, Monticello, did, and all of Minnesota has benefited from the clean electrical energy generated. For that reason, the legislature long ago determined that attached machinery and other personal property of these plants should be subject to taxation. This is almost the only personal property that is still taxed in Minnesota, but with good reason. We and the remainder of the Coalition of Utility Cities believe that real and personal property revenues are fair compensation for the economic, environmental, and social costs of big host communities. Since 9/11, the city of Red Wing has had to deal with heightened security for all of you. For 6 weeks after September 11th, the city of Red Wing was unable to use its airport. As you know, the valuation and tax treatment of real and personal property of baseload electric generation facilities has been an issue of contention between investor-owned utilities and host communities for many years. Although the investor-owned utilities
have received millions of dollars in tax breaks since 2001, 48 million to be exact. The investor-owned utilities continue to be dissatisfied with their valuations. Through constant pressure from lawsuits and proposed law changes, we who took on these risks have lost. The highlight of the new rules is the elimination of depreciation caps. Now investor utilities will be able to depreciate a property's value to zero. This equates to a $34 million decrease in property tax revenue statewide for local governments. In my city, the valuation will reduce by more than $126 million. Red Wing will see its city revenue decline by 10.3%. In order to maintain the same levy so that we don't cut essential service, $1.3 million in city property taxes will shift onto homeowners, a larger percentage of elderly than most of your communities, and other small businesses in our community. This will happen even after an estimated 750,000 increase in local government aid. Based on these numbers, Red Wing residential taxpayer property tax will increase an average of 6.7% independent of any other property tax increase. Red Wing took on this risk for all of you. We did this with the understanding that we would receive some tax value by doing this. Now you are pulling the rug out from under our feet, making it difficult for our elderly homeowners and for the small businesses that make up Red Wing. I thank you for being able to talk with you.
Thank you, Ms. Stuff. And other testifiers, and I think you've laid the groundwork and kind of set the summary, so other testifiers only add new information, and please keep it brief.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. She certainly has covered the issue quite well. I agree. We're a little town of about 300.
Your name, please.
I'm sorry. My name is Ken Paulson. I'm mayor of Becker, city of Becker. When the plant came to Becker, I think other places were turning them down. They didn't want it. Becker took them. And we were a little town of about 300 population with gravel streets and no sewer system. And, of course, the plant has been a great economic boom to our city, and our city has grown accordingly. And they've been quite generous with us in many respects. However, as my predecessor pointed out, we do live with some things that, if, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd pass around a few pictures taken.
Sure,
you can just
yeah.
In our city, if you look at those pictures, you'll see that the foreground in the pictures is the school, and the cloud behind it is the result of burning about 3 trainloads of coal a day. 3 trainloads, not 3 carloads. And we have piles of ashes in Becker that you wouldn't believe. Not all of it is ours. Not all of it comes from that plant. There are garbage burning plants in the state of Minnesota that bring their ash up there, so we've become a dumping ground for other parts of the state as well. And we can't stop that, but as a pretty hard to make up the loss that we would take in this. We would lose about $120 million in taxable value for our city. And you probably all heard of Becker Furniture World. They advertise a lot. If we were going to make up the tax that we would lose here, we would need 23 more of those things. And I don't think we can attract that kind of business to our town. Becker Furniture World is the biggest furniture market in the state of Minnesota. And over the last 15 years, we've seen declines in our property tax all along, and I think that this change is too much for our local people to be expected to bear. Homes and businesses, we think, will be unfairly taxed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the opportunity to support file 1113.
Thank you, Mayor Paulson.
Okay. Now, please state your name.
My name is Marshall Halleck with the City of Red Wing. First and foremost, thanks again for the opportunity to testify in support of this bill. The Coalition Utility Cities, which includes us, Red Wing, brought this bill to our representative in response to the DOR's soon-to-be-released changes to its utility property valuation rules. Despite what you hear today, Representative Wolfschlager's legislation will not raise taxes on utility property and therefore cannot increase utility rates. This is true because any new revenues generated by the higher class rates are simply offset by reduced valuations attributable to the new rules. In fact, the DOR has concluded that this proposal would effectively offset the shifts that would have otherwise occurred under the new valuation rules. In the City of Red Wing, to prevent the floor from dropping out on us with the DOR's new rule, we entered into what we refer to as a revenue stabilization agreement with Excel. The agreement sets 2007 as the base year of income for the city. The contract essentially calls for Excel to make up the difference in tax revenues lost for Red Wing as a result of Prairie Island's devaluation. If in any likely situation that the taxes increase, city revenues would go above the baseline, the city would pay Excel the difference back as an abatement. The agreement with Excel lasts for 10 years, but may terminate if the legislature passes this legislation. The city essentially signed the stabilization agreement because it really had no other choice than to protect ourselves. And I speak for the city, too, when I say that we'd would have rather not been put in a position to have to sign this deal. We look at the agreement like a floor to protect ourselves, but much rather operate under the state's property tax system than by a private contract with Excel. And I think, first and foremost, this is why Representative Wolfschlager's legislation is so essential. Even with this bill, we'll not be made quite whole. The fact is, we would need a change in the class rate of 3.09 to be held harmless. But this bill keeps us in a position we can live with, at the same time ensuring we're not financing essential city services by private contract. With that, I'd like to say thank you, and thanks again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Halleck. Representative Wolfschlager, any other testifiers you have?
There is a testifier in opposition.
Okay, we'll get to that. Is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of this bill? In the audience, anyone who would care to speak in favor, you would come down.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Paulson again from Becker. Could I point out one thing on those pictures? One of the pictures is of a water tower. And you notice the bottom of the water tower is all black. That's coal dust, and it's not just at the water tower. It's all over our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'm Steve Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association, whose membership includes the three host counties of Dakota, Washington, and Sherburne counties. Just want to point out a few things that will further expand on the committee's knowledge on this issue. One, when I appeared before the committee last Monday, I distributed this chart as part of my testimony on another bill. This shows the change in property taxes by class since 2001. This black column here, the 20% reduction since 2001, represents public utilities, who obviously have enjoyed a ride very dissimilar to other properties, such as homeowners, who have seen a 39% increase over the same period. The new rules proposed by the Department of Revenue will obviously increase the tax relief that the industry will receive above and beyond the 20% they've already received as a result of the 2001 tax reforms. Further thing I'd like to point out to you is that the information that was provided to you by the Department of Revenue is provided at the discrete individual city level, county level, and school district level. You have to combine those effects to determine the full impact on a property owner in each one of those jurisdictions. So just to clarify on that issue. Finally, I'd like to state our support for Representative Wolfschlager's legislation, or in the alternative, state aid to offset the impacts of the substantial reductions that the utilities will receive as a result of the new rules, assuming that they're ultimately promulgated. As is already obvious, it will have extraordinary impacts on the residents of those communities, and anything the committee and legislature can do to offset those impacts will be appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Carlson.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I'd like to weigh in support of Representative Wolfschlager's bill as well. As a statewide organization, we've looked at this issue from our policy committee perspective, and we think that it's important to recognize the environmental challenges that these communities face and to provide them with some benefit for being a host to these facilities. So I'll leave it at that, but we do support this legislation.
Thank you very much. Sir, please state your name.
Hi, my name is Clint Herbst. I'm mayor of the city of Monticello, one of the host communities. I just think something we all have to remember is, and we've all heard it, not in my backyard. And as we move forward looking for these facilities to try to get placed in the future, we have to remember the impact that it'll have on them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor. All right. Representative Wolfschlager, you know, there is a list of testifiers in opposition. I just call them down one by one, or if you... So, if we could have several come down at a time here to save time, and those who are opposed, I know there's a number of testifiers, and I guess we can start with Mr. Nesbig, or somebody from CenterPoint Energy, and then up on deck, XL Energy in the Hole, Alliance Pipeline. And, you know, please, so we don't repeat this, keep your comments to the point and as brief as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kirk Nesbig. I'm Director of Accounting and Budget for CenterPoint Energy. And I just want to make a few points. First of all, I want to distinguish gas companies from electric companies. On this issue, we don't have the host community issue. We don't have high concentrations of value in a relatively small number of communities. Our value is spread out throughout our system. Having said that, this bill, the change in class rates, represents a significant increase to us in property taxes. It would be an increase that would be passed on to our customers throughout our system, which would take the form of higher gas bills throughout our system, and I don't think that's a good thing. Secondly, the impact of the rule change to me is far from certain on the gas side. It does give the Department of Revenue quite a bit more discretion in determining value, so I really don't know what the impact on us will be, but we do know the impact will be phased in over 3 years. Certainly over the first 2 years, over the next 2 years, if this bill were to pass, it would represent a significant tax increase for us. Also, I think there's a fairness issue here. We would just like to be treated the same as other commercial industrial property. If other commercial industrial property, say, decrease in value, would the legislative response be to increase the rates for other types of commercial industrial property? I mean, I think there's a fairness issue here that would say that all commercial industrial property should be treated equally. And finally, I would just say regarding changes in class rates that have occurred since the year 2000, any benefit that we've gotten from the change in those class rates has been passed on to our customers in the form of lower gas bills, which is a good thing. Thank you.
Mr. Nesbig, thank you. Is there a representative from XL Energy? And then Alliance Pipeline on deck.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Joe Reinberger with the Tax Department of XL Energy. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share our concerns regarding this bill. What I'd like to do at this point is to pass out a graph that illustrates the impact of the personal property tax on our annual tax bill. Like other businesses, utilities pay commercial and industrial tax on their real property, land, building structures, those sorts of assets. However, unlike other businesses, utilities are also taxed on the value of their personal property, generating, transmission, and distribution equipment and machinery. If we were taxed like other non-utility commercial and industrial businesses, for example, if we manufactured paper or chemical products or automobile parts, we estimate that we would pay about $30 million in commercial and industrial property taxes statewide in 2007. And that's the green section of your graph that's being handed out. But because we're a utility and are subject to tax on our personal property, we pay $110 million this year in property tax to Minnesota jurisdictions. If you do the math, the personal property tax provides an additional $80 million per year to the Minnesota communities in which we have property. And that's the amber-colored section of the graph that got passed up. This is, note that this is above and beyond, this is $80 million above and beyond what other businesses pay in these communities. In Red Wing, for example, if we were taxed like any commercial and industrial business, we would pay annual property taxes of under $1 million. But because we are subject to the personal property taxes, we pay an additional $3.5 million more. We estimate that House File 1113 would increase our property tax liability by approximately $20 million based on current rates and assessments, and that is the red section of your graph. These additional property tax costs would be passed on to our customers in the form of higher rates for gas and electric. The DOR analysis, the department's analysis that Mr. Volkman talked about, is based on current levies and rates. Does not include any expected growth in the communities that would be impacted by a change in the valuation rule. And keep in mind there's also a bounce back factor at play here. The notion that if the valuation formula is corrected and utility valuations decrease, local levies would likely be raised. As a major part of the tax base in these communities, we will pay a significant part of any levy increases, offsetting the property tax reduction from the valuation correction. While XL believes it is reasonable to pursue a correction of the valuation beyond the relief of a phase-in provision that is in the rule, we understand that the adjustment may still have an impact on the communities where we constitute a large part of the tax base and where revenues have been declining, and we have been working with these communities to help mitigate the impact. We have initiated agreements with communities most impacted by a rule change under which we would make payments to these communities at the current amount over a period of 10 years, irrespective of the impact of the rule change.
Mr. Reinberger, would you please conclude?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My colleague Glenn Keel is here to tell you about an agreement we signed with the City of Red Wing to keep our payments at the current levels despite a change in the rule. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can you do this in about 30 seconds? Because we've got several groups here, and
I will do it.
Allotting about 2 minutes per group to keep things in. We're over that. So please state your name and proceed.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Glenn Keel. I'm a community relations manager for XL Energy. I live in Red Wing and work with communities in southeastern Minnesota, including Red Wing and Goodhue County, which is host to our Prairie Island nuclear generating plant. As the Department of Revenue was proceeding with the rulemaking process, communities that host our largest baseload facilities, that being primarily Red Wing, Becker, and Monticello, expressed concern about the impact of the proposed rule. While XL Energy felt it was important to address the rule, we also understand that the relationships we have with those communities is very important. Prairie Island has been operating for over 30 years, and many of its 700 employees and their families make Red Wing their home. We also operate a refuse-derived fuel plant in Red Wing and provide gas and electric service to that area. In an effort to address the concerns from those communities, as my colleague Joe Reinberger said, we contacted Red Wing, Monticello, and Becker in 2004, and over the last 2 years have been working to complete that agreement. Red Wing, Goodhue County, and XL Energy entered into an agreement, a revenue stabilization agreement, in late 2006. Copies of that agreement had also been sent to Becker, Monticello, and their respective counties.
Thank you very much, Mr. Keel.
Thank you.
Alliance Pipeline is next, and Northern Natural Gas Pipeline is on deck. You would please state your name and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tony Strackwitty, and I represent Alliance Pipeline. Alliance is a new interstate natural gas pipeline system that delivers much-needed environmentally preferred fossil fuel from Canada to the Midwest markets. We went into service in December 1 of 2000, so we're a net new economic development, net new impact relative to the states and the counties that we cross through in the state of Minnesota. We currently are regulated as an interstate pipe by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. To put it in perspective, we're a 2,000-mile-long truck. We do not own the gas that's on our system. We simply move it from point A to point B. And so we do not profit from any swing in the market. As part of our startup, Alliance established a U.S. headquarters office in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and we've created 29 new well-paying jobs in the state focused on the safe, efficient operation of a natural gas pipeline delivery system. Currently, we transport much-needed natural gas safely. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask everyone to please utilize the state one-call system, the Gopher State one-call, call before you dig. It's in your best interest safety-wise, and it helps to preserve and protect utilities overall. I'm here to testify on House Bill 1113. The proposed bill will impact Alliance Pipeline relative to property taxes that we pay in the counties that we cross through. Two significant concerns. One is Alliance will see an estimated $1 million additional increase in our property tax burden in the state of Minnesota. That comes on top of an increase of $1.4 million that we were faced with relative to changes in the state law relating to property to compressor fuel tax, which we believe is an industrial input. Obviously, we're being taxed on that now, so it's a new source of income for the state overall. We're concerned about that. Secondly, the longer-term impact of this property tax potential increase would be one of basically stifling further economic development, whether that's of the Alliance Pipeline system or future development. As many of you may follow, there's a natural gas pipeline being proposed to come from Alaska to Midwest markets. We'd like to have Alliance to be a key player to bring that gas through the state, potentially provide gas into the state of that national treasure. Obviously, this type of a proposal could stymie that. In fact, I can speak to other pipelines that are specifically routing around the state of Minnesota because of the property tax regime that they're facing. With that, I'll answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. We could have a representative from Northern Natural Gas Pipeline. And please keep your comments just to how this bill is going to impact directly your business. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joanne Wright. I'm the manager of property tax for Northern Natural Gas Company. Northern is also an interstate natural gas pipeline. We have almost 16,000 miles of pipeline running from West Texas up to our market area here in Minnesota and northern Iowa. We have over 3,000 miles of pipe here in the state. We employ over 100 people in the state. Last year, we paid over $6.8 million in real and personal property tax. As the representative from Alliance said, we feel this places an unfair burden on pipelines. The legislature already reinstituted the sales and use tax on compressor fuel. Northern has paid an additional $1.2 million since the reinstitution of that tax in August of 2005. At the same time, the legislature removed pipelines from the sales and use tax exemption on capital equipment. We are in the process of making a significant capital expenditure here in the state of Minnesota, and we no longer are entitled to the exemption of sales and use tax like any other commercial business might be entitled to. According to the Department of Revenue figures in the handout Mr. Folkman provided and supported by our own internal analysis, we are not facing a decrease in value under the new rules. In fact, we have a moderate increase. We view this change in the tax capacity rate as a 12.5% increase in our property taxes. This isn't going to offset any decrease, but layer an additional tax increase to our company. We don't feel this bill makes any sense and is not fair, particularly if applied to the transmission industry. And I think, as another representative has already pointed out, this bill is effective immediately, whereas the rule changes are being phased in.
Thank
End
you.
Of my comments. Thank you. I'll
Thank you, Ms.
answer
Wright.
Any questions.
Thank you very much. Northern Border Pipeline and then Great Lakes Gas Transmission.
Mr. Chair, there will not be representatives from those organizations.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone in the audience who would care to speak against House File 1113? Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lauren Lontak from Ottertail Power Company in Fergus Falls. My company serves northwestern Minnesota, a lot of small towns and farms, and we have a plant in Fergus Falls called Hoot Lake Plant. It's our oldest plant in our system. House File 1113 would increase my company's tax burden on our overall property by about 16%. Now, the only question I want to raise for the committee is who's going to pay for the tax increase that goes to Fergus Falls and Ottertail County. The answer is there's no pot of gold, that in the end it's our other ratepayers who pay for this. And so it's our ratepayers in Hallock and Twin Valley and Wheaton, Erskine and Appleton. Who's going to benefit from the increased taxes from House File 1113? It'll be the city of Fergus Falls, and it'll be Ottertail County. I live in Fergus Falls. I own a home in Fergus Falls. Fergus Falls is not a poor town. Fergus Falls does very well. It also benefits by the 40 jobs provided by Hoot Lake Power Plant. My concerns with House File Tax 13 is that it's a tax increase on some of our cities paid to the city of Fergus Falls primarily. Mr. Chair, that concludes my comments. One other thing I want to mention is that my understanding is that the governor's supplemental budget may also have some transitional funding proposed for host communities. So
thank
that
you
concludes
very
my testimony.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Anyone else care to speak in opposition? Now we're going to open up. Any members have questions? Remember, this is going to be laid over, but there's questions or comments. And there's maybe several approaches we can look at doing this, but I do appreciate Representative Oschlager bringing this very, very important issue up because it does really negatively impact some communities, and we need to deal with that. Any closing comments, Representative?
Yes, if I may, please, Chair, members. I mean, this legislation is proposed because it's a hardship on the people. I mean, I'm not trying to make it any harder than that. And to the points made by the power companies, guess what? Utilities are a regulated industry. They have eminent domain. They have other means of working that other businesses don't have. I mean, the nuclear power plants have a federal insurance provision. In terms of eminent domain, I can speak firsthand because the Prairie Island nuclear plant sits on my grandma and grandpa's farm. We certainly were not asked if we wanted the nuclear plant on our farm. It was taken. So to act as though utilities, regulated industries, are like any other business is wrong, and I object to that. With that, I hope you can support this, and lay it over, please.
Thank you very much, Representative Oschlager. And members, we're open to any and all ideas on this as we move forward. This is one approach here, and it's an area we need to solve. So with that, the chair will lay over House File 1113 for possible inclusion into the division report. So
thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to officially, when Representative Murphy was here to present her bill, there wasn't a quorum. So many of you haven't heard her bill, but she told the members it was a good one. And so with that, first of all, I want a motion to move that for possible inclusion, and then I'm going to lay it over. So would someone care to move this? Representative Loeffler moves a good bill, Representative Murphy's bill for possible inclusion in the division report, and I will lay House File 1459 over for possible inclusion in the division report. We're going to move to, we're going to do the minutes right now. Oh, we have a quorum also. Minutes to approve Monday, March 5th. Minutes, anyone care to make that motion? Representative Loeffler moves to approve the March 5th, 2007 minutes of the division. Any debate? Hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. House File 969, Representative Simpson, who has been before this committee with resort bills before and fighting on their behalf. Welcome, Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Chairman Mark Court and members. We're going to make this quick. I know you're on a tight schedule and definitely had a lot of information on the last bill. Basically, what this bill does is it takes the Class 1 resorts and the Class C resorts and moves up the valuation from $500,000 to $1 million on the property. And I have with me a couple testifiers that would like to talk about it, and I don't need to get on my soapbox and talk about resorts. I think most of you have heard it already, so I think we'll just turn it over to our testifiers. Okay?
And before you do that, we have a motion to Representative Lanny moves House File 969 for possible inclusion in the division report. So please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts. And just want you to know we appreciate the hard work of this committee and the legislature to help the small resort industry, and this is an additional piece of that. The bill that Representative Simpson has before you sprang from your committee's discussion and the chair's admonition to remind us to look at best use. And the Department of Revenue indicated to us at that time that the best way to handle rising lakeshore values, in their opinion, is to periodically adjust the tiers in the 1C resort property, as opposed to looking at other things that we've talked about in the past, alternative forms of valuation, green acre style approach. And so that's why 969 is here before you today. And I would like to note to the committee, although it's not before you, there is some property tax proposals for resorts in that were in the chair's technical bill from the Department of Revenue. You remove them out of the bill, and I don't know where they're going to land, but I want you to know that the small resort community does support those changes as advocated by the Department of Revenue as being helpful. And if they do come back at some point, they come with our support. The last thing, Mr. Chairman and members, you know, resorts are part of our heritage. I've got two gentlemen here to talk about their evaluation situation over the past several years. Mark Novotny from Hideaway Bay Resort. Now, it doesn't get any more Minnesotan than that. And Ed Becker from Inwego Resort. And so I'd like to have them talk about their situation, and we appreciate your help and support. And we're down from over 3,000 resorts in Minnesota down to about 900, and we think that these efforts really help stem that decline, and we appreciate your assistance. Thank you.
Mr. Novotny, do you want to, or Mr. Beckman?
My name is Mark Novotny.
Okay.
From Hideaway Bay Resort up near Hackensack, Minnesota. I want to thank you for your time. In 2002 to 2006, I've seen a 142% increase in my property tax valuation. Just from 2005 and 2006, I saw a 28% increase in my property valuation. And even though the previous bill helped us out, the increase in valuation has eaten that up, and we need to increase those tiers so that we can viably work in the industry. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Ed.
Mr. Becker, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Becker, and my wife and I, Sarah, own Inwego Resort up by Nevis, Minnesota. We purchased the resort from I was going to say pretty much what Mark said, so I'll tell you a little something different. My wife and I moved up to the resort and purchased it from her parents back in 2003. We did it for a lifestyle change. We wanted to be able to be one of the success stories for the small mom-and-pa resorts. Some of the things, and mine doesn't inflate 147%, but since we've been there, it has been just over 100% increase, about 104% increase in property taxes. It's those types of things that are going to continue to drive resorts the opposite direction of where I believe that the state really wants them to be. So I do appreciate you taking the time to listen to me today with this bill. My wife and I really support this bill, and so does the resort community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions for any of the testifiers or the author?
Representative Simpson, any closing?
Well, just in closing, I know that every time we make these look at these policies, we do make shifts and we do make corrections, and we had the opportunity in 2003 to do that, and it certainly helped the resorts. I said all along, the person who wants to move out of this facility, sell it for other uses, should be allowed to do that. But I'd like to keep the resorts that are in business and want to stay in business there. And that's my goal in this whole process. And I'd like to thank the chair for signing on to this, because I think he understands this resort issue as much as I do and has been a very strong supporter for it. So that's about it.
Representative Simpson, thank you so much for your work in this area. And the chair will lay over House File 969 for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
One point, last brief thing, which I failed to mention. In addition to the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, the bill does have the support of Hospitality Minnesota, and I was asked to make sure that I brought that up so we didn't have to have someone else come and testify. Thank you.
So we duly noted on the record. So thank you. At this time, we have House File 486, Representative Fenstedt. This is the homestead classification. It used to be called the borrowing. Was that right, Ms. Baker? They used to borrow. That was the borrowing they used to call this. But all right, Representative Fenstedt, would someone care to move House File 486? Representative Lanning moves House File 486 for possible inclusion into the division report. Representative Fenstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have to quickly point out, the last time I was in front of any tax committee, it took me about 12 hours to get out. And I got through a Representative Lanchesky's district and others, so I will promise that this will be quick. I had some folks from my district that were going to come up here to testify. They weren't able to make it, but I'm going to try to be very quick, and I'll tell you their story, and then I might have staff just quickly reference the tax implications or the tax benefits. Essentially, in rural Minnesota, and specifically my district, I have a few business owners that live where they work. I have a bakery in my district, and the main floor is the bakery, and upstairs is where the family lives. A bookstore owner that owns a bookstore, and upstairs is where he lives, and then also a welder. He has a two-story facility house, and his business is run out of the first floor, and he lives in the second floor. The history of this is essentially how we treated these folks was in law for many years. And that was I'll just quickly read this here and I'll let staff give me the details. But it provides that in a case of property tax, property classified as both homestead and non-homestead, that the homestead benefits are conferred on the greater of the portion actually used as a homestead, or a market value of $76,000. So that, I believe, the law changed in around 2003, and so we've heard from some of these property owners in my district, but I know of talking to other rural members that they've heard it also. So that's why I bring this forward. Like I said, I had some testifiers that were going to be here, but they weren't able to make it. And if staff, if the committee feels, if staff could go over it really quick, I would appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Representative. Members, do you need any more background on this? Otherwise, yeah, Representative Maury.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fenstedt, I know that some of the small sports stadiums around Minnesota are on privately owned land, and I'm just wondering if you're trying to split something.
You are out of order, and we do not need 12 hours of debate here in committee today. All right, any further questions or comments? If not, the chair will lay over House File 486 for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
At this time, members, we're going to move to House File 469, and I do want to say for everyone that Representative Thiessen, who had a bill up earlier, we asked him if he could forego that because we have a number of testifiers on these next two, and he said yes. So Representative Thiessen has afforded some time. He was up earlier on the agenda to hopefully allow time here for these two bills. And actually, the 1125 is, I think, pretty identical to that. And so, it's up to you, Representative Swigum. Do you?
I can join you. That'd be fine.
Okay, that would be fine. And so, if we'll just put them both in. Okay, Representative Lanning moves House File 469 for possible inclusion in the division report, and
Can we do another one at the end? Representative Lanning also moves House File 1125 for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Swagum, Representative Dittmer, thank you so much for being here and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And to members, thank you for your time. I understand your time constraints, Mr. Chairman, so we'll be very, very quick. Both bills are very, very similar. As you can see from the audience, a number of persons from VFW's legions here to support the legislation. I'm sure they'd all like to speak, but we might have one or two of them just make a comment. Mr. Chairman, members, this is a bill that I would tell you would be there to try to help support and maybe even save, in some cases, some of our local VFW's legions, Knights of Columbus's non-profit, community non-profit type service organizations, service agencies that we all have in our rural small towns and even in the metro area. Mr. Chairman, what this bill would do very, very simply would change the class rate for service-oriented organizations if they met a certain criteria. And that criteria would be that they would have to contribute to their local communities at least 50% of the organization's previous year's property tax. Currently, the VFW in Zimbrota, the VFW in Kenyon, the Legion in Fieldworth is classified as basically a commercial property. It's classified in that commercial property, 3A commercial property status. It gets taxed at the same rate as other commercial properties, including the statewide property tax. It's a significant burden upon our local VFWs and legions that are basically there as a service organization and give lots of monies back into their communities. You know, they fund the Girls Softball Association, they fund the Legion Baseball Program, they give their monies to folks within the community that have difficulties, as you all know, maybe difficulty with a loss of a home or difficulty from financial standpoints. Very, very giving groups, and the property taxes have risen to the point where it's an extreme, extreme burden on these local service organizations. The bill would then basically take it from the commercial 3A classification, where they pay the 2% in the statewide property tax, to if they met the criteria of giving money back to the community, to put them in the, treat them as a 4C property tax area, where they would simply pay the 1.5% as opposed to going to the 2% and then getting in the statewide category. Probably would save in most cases for our rural VFWs and our legions someplace in the neighborhood of 30 to 40% of their property tax burden. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would let the Representative Dittmer say a word, and we do have some testifiers, but we'd hold it to one or two if you would like that.
Thank you, Representative Swagum, and you know, we do have for sure until about 11:25, so if there, we've left some time for some testifiers, because I know they've come a long way, but if Representative Dittmer would just talk about the few differences there, and then we'll listen to testifiers. And, oh, we also have an amendment, I think, on your bill.
That's correct.
And there's one change. We have an A1 amendment, and it's, is that in everyone's?
Yep.
Okay. There is an 1125 A1 amendment, and on line 1.2, it should say page 3 rather than page 2.
Yeah.
So you could change that. So do I hear a motion? Representative Dittmer moves to approve the A1 amendment. Any debate on that? If not, I'll call for the vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion amendment is adopted. Representative Dittmer, and welcome to the committee.
Yeah, Chairman Marquardt and committee. Again, this is my first presentation, and I feel honored to be sitting here next to Representative Swagum. Our bills are pretty much the same. There's only, I'll just point out the two differences in the two bills. My bill requires the VFW of the American Legion is to donate 100% of their last year's taxes to the community. And the other change would be that all the facilities, if community members wanted to use their facilities, it would be free of charge, like for banquets or that type of thing. And the third change is that I've increased it from 2 acres to 3 acres because of the ball fields and different facilities that they have in the community that they support the community in. I think all of you have probably, over the years, during your campaigns and stuff, you've visited your local VFWs, American Legions, and I think you all can agree to how much they have to give to our communities, especially now when we've got over 3,000 troops coming back from Iraq. They're going to really be busy helping out these families and supporting these troops as they come back. I've been hearing a lot of testimony. I'm on the Veterans Affairs Committee, and there's going to be a lot of work to be done by these service organizations. So with that, that's all I have.
Well, we will now listen to anyone who care to testify in favor of these House files, either one. So, Representative
Chairman Marquardt, if you don't mind, maybe I would call upon Bob Davis first, and then Bob, is it? Ron. We'll let Bob Davis, who is actually a Goodhue County Veteran Service Officer, testify first, and then Ron Weiss, who is from White Bear Lake, maybe?
Horse Lake.
Okay. Mr. Davis.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Robert Davis. I'm the Goodhue County Veteran Service Officer, and we have been one for the last 23 years. Indeed, this bill is important to not only the organizations, but all the veterans and dependents in the state. As you just heard, we've got the 34th BCT due back sometime in probably August, and we have an agreement between the VFW and the National Guard, a memorandum of understanding to use these posts at no cost for family support groups. As it is right now, myself and other CVSOs are using these posts at no cost to meet with the families. I actually use four of the posts in my county as satellite offices at no cost to make it easier to get to the families and dependents. I would ask your support to lower this property tax base to make it easier, and even with the additional reporting required, and they're more than willing to do it, to lower this tax on the organizations that provide the service to their home communities. Thank you.
Mr. Weiss, would you care just please your name and then...
Ron Weiss, representing the American Legion 3rd District and the Department of Minnesota. I'm from Forest Lake, post 225. As an example, my post, we pay over $50,000 property taxes, and we have a community support commitment over $150,000. We support most of the school programs along with their comrades in the VFW. A tremendous amount of community programs, including food shelves and so on. We're also facing a major downfall with our charitable gambling. It's always decreasing. My post, for example, just completed, I think it's over 10,000 troop packs that were donated and promoted by our post, and over $7,000 in postage. We're the largest contributor in our community to the Youth Service Bureau. With the VFW and the Legion support, there would be no sports program for the schools, and this bill would be very helpful to keep our continuing support to our community and programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sir?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Commander Bud Self, Forest Lake, Post 4210. And I'll make it as brief as possible. We're in favor of this bill because of two problems. Number one is the taxes, you already know. 40 to 45% of our income goes to taxes. $3,450 a month is for taxes alone. As you know, we're a service organization. And in order to be ready for the servicemen coming back as well as taking care of the ones that we have right now, we have to plan ahead. And you'll have to realize that we also have community projects like Ron said. And as the taxes go up, our services go down. And we hate that because we're there to help the people. As far as the area is concerned, the 3 acres, we have 2.7 acres. And we have the ball field, we have volleyball courts, we have bocce ball courts. We have horseshoe courts, so you can see that is well used by the community as well as our club itself. And with that, I'd like to thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Demmer, you had a question? Any further testifiers, representatives?
We do have Representative Chairman Mark Clark. We do have other persons here who could testify if you wanted to, but I don't know if it would add anything to the service organization testimony already. The bottom line is, would you like to?
Yep. Okay.
Just real quick.
Okay, please state your name. We need that officially for the record.
Okay. Byron Boris, and I'm with the VFW in Zumbrota, Minnesota. And I've got a letter here that I'll leave with Steve, but it's from our bank. And for the last 3 years, 2003, 4, and 5, we've lost money. And luckily, the banker is a member, a good member, and he's given us money to keep us going. So we've done everything possible. We've taken, we do our own laundry. We negotiated insurance. We've got volunteers for everything we possibly can get volunteers for. We took our club manager. We had to let him go. We take the house committee now and divided up all his responsibilities. So we've done everything we possibly can to cut. We don't have any other place to cut. We give the auditorium. We've got a nice auditorium. The Girl Scouts use it. The Boy Scouts use it. The 65-50 Club uses it. The Lions Club uses it. The Cancer Relief for Life activities. And now we've got some churches, when they have big funerals, they come and use our auditorium. So financially, we're in terrible shape. We've made every change we possibly can, and now we're asking for changes in taxes. So we appreciate everything that you can possibly do for our club. We all love our club, and we want what's best for the community and our club. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the property tax burden on these clubs is going to be a real, real burden. They've had struggled, many of them, in the past years. You've heard that the pull-tab sales are down, you know, 0.08, felony DWI, now maybe smoking ban, whatever they're going to take place. Many of our service organizations are not going to survive with the property tax burden they currently have. This preferential treatment would only take place if they gave and contributed back to their communities. Yep. So it's based upon the preferential treatment away from the commercial class if they give money back to the communities, which we want them all to do.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the time, chance to comment. I just want to pile on, I guess, with the people who have been testifying. My communities, the American Legions, they exist, number one, for the camaraderie and benefit and welfare of the veterans that come back. And in doing so, they have these clubs that provide nothing but community support, Mr. Chair and members. They don't, not only do they not get anything back monetarily, but they're actually contributing their time and money to helping these things go for the benefit of our communities. Tremendous resource. I know the clubs that in my communities, not only do they have the clubs, but they offer equipment, the handicap equipment, that sort of thing, and do lots of things. So as far as I'm concerned, this is a no-brainer. We need to do this to help them. They are struggling. They have increased costs like everybody else, and really no sense of revenue, no source of revenue other than the pull tabs or the things that they're doing voluntarily to try to bring money in to maintain it. So I can't be any stronger in support, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments from Representative Denver?
I don't believe so, Chairman Mark, but you and I both come from similar communities. Yeah. Imagine being in Barnesville without the VFW or Legion Color Guard being there to lead the parade. We need these service organizations, and we need to help them with this property tax burden. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Representative Denver?
Chairman Marquardt and committee members, again, being a member myself of both organizations, a veteran, it's just an honor that I was asked to bring this bill unto you. So we hope that this can pass this committee. Thank you.
Well, I do appreciate the authors bringing this forward and all the testifiers, because as Representative Spagan says, we're well aware of what your service organizations provide to our communities and also your service to our nation. So thanks for traveling up and being here. And Representative Slagan, Representative Detmer, thank you so much for bringing this forward. And with that, I'm going to, the chair will lay over, I'll do this separately, House File 455 for possible inclusion in the division report, 469 in the division report, and I'll lay over House File 1125 for possible inclusion. Any other announcements for the good of the order? If not, yes, Representative
Demmer. Chair, I know you're curious. The Hayfield Vikings did win their game the other night. We're in the section finals Friday night, Mr. Chair.
Congratulations. I will be watching that. And that's against who, Representative Demmer?
Chair, we'll be playing Fairmont.
Okay.
In Mankato.
Very good. Best wishes. All right. And we are adjourned with that good note.